Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Cubs Talk Podcast. I'm Tony Andracki here with Kelly Kroll, and as always, we are sponsored by Wintrust, home of Cubs free checking. Head to wintrust.com/Cubs for more info. Kelly, unfortunately, we're kind of starting with a somber note here. The baseball world has been taken aback this week after the World Series ends with Roy Halladay's tragic passing in a plane crash. And I'm actually not even sure what body of water it was that it occurred.
Yeah, the Gulf of Mexico, I think. Okay. That's what I read.
You know, while Halladay never pitched in Chicago for the Cubs or Sox at all, there was definite outreach from so many different guys. We talked about, you know, Travis Wood's wife, Brittany, had a very impactful tweet, and different guys, Dan Heron, Dan Plesac, John Lester. Mm-hmm. It seemed like Halladay had an impact on almost everybody in baseball.
Yeah, that's what I took away. I, you know, never had the opportunity to cover him personally, but I covered a lot of guys who had the opportunity to play with him, and he seemed like he was so much more than a pitcher to this game. And I think that's what you take away in the day and age that we have now with Twitter and other social media platforms, whether it be Facebook or anything. You recognize when a guy has impacted baseball beyond just their performances, which for him was no doubt one of the best of the generation. But it sounds like from things you hear the players say and players' wives and just people who are around baseball, is that he was that guy who made a difference in the world, period. Many of us remember that Sports Illustrated issue that featured the five starters, right, of the Phillies, and they were, but so many wanted to label them the four aces, and Halladay was the one who was like, "We're not doing this photo shoot unless Joe Blanton's included," and he was the guy that was being overlooked by the national scene anyway, but that's the kind of teammate he was. And then the father and husband and all of those other characteristics that we don't always get to see, but in this instance, we're getting to hear about it from other players. So I think it's just important that we make mention of that, because he certainly did. I know this is a Cubs podcast, but he certainly touched a lot of lives on that Cubs coaching staff the entire team for that matter.
Yeah, that Sports Illustrated, it's actually really funny. I saw that being retweeted after the news of Halladay's passing came out. And it's funny. Go look at that and look at Joe Blanton. You will see Kyle Schwarber. They have the same facial hair. Somebody made a joke of it first, and I was like, "Oh, crap. He really does look like Schwarber." So, you know, it is funny. But that's a fantastic story that I'd never heard until after Halladay's passing here. But we actually, Halladay was supposed to come to Chicago.
Yeah,
that was
right.
The plan for next weekend, the weekend before Thanksgiving. There's a whole Fanatics event in Rosemont with several former players, current players, a bunch of current Cubs will be there. And Halladay was supposed to be one of the former players that was able to make it. So obviously sad in that regard, too. That is the one area.
You would have loved to have heard what he had to say about a guy like Kyle Hendricks.
Exactly.
And really any of the pitchers, but Kyle would have been an intriguing one.
You know, back to baseball, which seems kind of meaningless at a time like this in a lot of aspects. But it was reported this week that John Lackey is not retiring. He will be playing baseball in 2018 if he has it his way. So that being said, the Cubs need to start. Pitcher. John Lackey's a starting pitcher. John Lackey's an unretired starting pitcher that's a free agent. John Lackey in Chicago 2018?
I think it's a definite possibility. I think the Cubs make sense. I think, in a way, probably the Cardinals make sense. I think just about any team in the division probably makes sense in a way. I mean, this is a guy who's been in the National League since, 2014, basically. So I don't see him making a switch, really, to an American League team at this point. But I know what people who are listening to this right now are probably thinking. If you're not a fan of John Lackey because of whatever, all the homers he gave up last season, keep in mind he wasn't the only guy that struggled with that last year. But in the back half of the season, if I'm not mistaken, in his last 12 starts, he went 6-2 with a 3.82 ERA. If you're looking for a guy to eat up some innings that you know what he brings to the table, John Lackey still makes sense from a durability standpoint. 30 starts for his ninth time of his career last year. This guy is going to take the ball every fifth day. You're going to see that intense competitiveness on the mound. He's a guy that Wilson Contreras knows how to work with. And I think it's something they'll definitely explore. And hey, who knows? Maybe it's a very team-friendly deal for the Cubs and they feel like they can't pass it up. I think it's something you will definitely hear them explore. And if not, he's a guy that could land with, I mean, I've even seen reports of the Brewers could show interest in him. Here's a team that's got a young starting staff, right? But they're going to be missing Jimmy Nelson for the first half of the year. You slide John Lackey into their five spot. Do the Cubs want to face him? I don't know. So I think it's a fit that would not surprise me. How about that? I wouldn't be surprised if he came back. His family knows Chicago. They know, you know, the area. And so I could see it working out. But I also, if he decided to walk and go somewhere else, wouldn't be surprised either.
Why not? Like you said, he's a number five starter. If he does get hurt, which durability has not been an issue with him lately, even if he does get hurt, then that's where a guy like Mike Montgomery comes in. But there are a lot of other options out there that would be far worse than John
Lackey.
That's
exactly what I was thinking. I think it might be a little bit of a, you know, that's just where your emotions go initially. But when you really have time to think it through, how many better options are out there? Would you want Brett Anderson back in that five spot? He didn't perform any better than John Lackey. And especially, like I said, 6-2 in his last 12 starts. I mean, the guys behind him know what he brings to the table. I mean, they know what he's going to do. And the Bulldog mentality, I think something, too, that maybe we keep in mind, you and I know this from having been in the clubhouse quite a bit, is that he and John Lester share something very special. I mean, there's a brotherhood behind those two that they keep one another in line quite a bit. The guy that was in between them in terms of a locker was kind of like David Ross. And since he's been gone, I don't know. I mean, there's something to the John Lester without David Ross and John Lackey. Who does he become in a way? The identity that, I mean, no, granted, he's been in this game a long, long time. I have no question marks about John Lester. But I just think there's something about it that makes sense, like you're saying. But I do, from a fan reaction, I didn't realize it was that strongly
I was not expecting
in the
that
no
either.
Category. Because I'm with you. You can run the – I mean, the grass isn't always greener, right? How about we go with that cliche? I mean, I don't know who else is out there unless – I know we're going to segue into it. The whole Hayward for a possible Samardzija coming back, I think that is a pipe dream from what we're beginning to hear.
But also at the same time, even with Samardzija, it's not like there's a huge contrast between numbers that Samardzija's put up and numbers that Lackey's put up.
And it's a lot harder to hit home runs in San Francisco than it is in Wrigley, okay? Like, keep in mind, I think Wrigley is 5 now on, like, most home runs. So, I mean, Lackey's not the only guy. That happens to be his home. So that's harder on him. But, like, I'm just curious what other pitchers are out there and available that people would like to see as a possible 5 guy? Or are they all wanting to see Mike Montgomery slide into a starter's role? Is that what some of that, you know, I don't want to say beef, but is that where some of it comes from? I think that's going to be a no, guys, for anyone who's curious sitting and listening to this. I think from what we've heard from Joe Maddon and others, I think Mike Montgomery is going to have the same role that he had. And Theo, right? That was his lasting comments.
Postmortem press conference thing, yeah.
Was you will see him in the similar role. We will stretch him out at spring training. He will have, you know, potential to start if we have someone who's not ready. But for the most part, you're going to see him come out of the bullpen and then be that spot starter every time we need him. So I don't think that's his role next year.
Yeah, I think part of the walks have been a huge reason why maybe there's not as much confidence with Montgomery sliding into the rotation that they thought. But yeah, definitely, there aren't a ton of options out there. There's Arrieta, Yu Darvish, Alex Cobb, and then after that, there are huge question marks about everybody else. So, yeah, definitely with you on that. But to touch base quickly here, too, before we take a break and get to an interview with Patrick Mooney and Jed Hoyer, the Hayward deal that you brought up. We talked about it on the podcast last week. Barstool Sports White Sox Dave was the first to tweet about it last week. David Kaplan came on the podcast, had the exact same information about possible Hayward to San Francisco for Jeff Samardzija and Mark Melancon in return. That's really picked up steam this week, that specific rumor. That there's a lot of moving parts in that. Mm-hmm. All three guys have no trade clauses. Samardzija's includes 22 teams. Jason Hayward's includes anybody. It's a full no trade clause for 2018. So it's really difficult to see why the Giants would take on $146 million that Hayward is owed. I think it's just shy of that. Or how much money the Cubs would kick in to get rid of a guy that we talked about is the rain delay speeches and everything else. Right. But this dude is one of the most professional guys. Yeah. I think back to spring training when I was out there covering, and this spring of 2017, he had obviously gone through a really, really tough year, 2016. Mm-hmm. I never saw him impatient. I never saw him get frustrated by the questions. He clearly understood why people were asking these questions of him. Yep. So there was a spring training game, I think it was against the Angels, and he hit like a home run. He had a couple hits. So afterwards, everybody wanted to talk to him. He came out of the game in like the fifth inning. Chicago media, everybody's trying to talk to him in this crammed room where Hayward's almost hitting the ceiling fan because it was just such a small room and he's this monstrous man. And it was like Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, and somebody else, maybe Schwarber, were like trying to get out, and they were waiting. They wanted Hayward to leave really quickly. Instead, Hayward sits there and he answers everybody's questions patiently and talks over and over. And they're basically all the same questions, like, hey, how'd you learn how to hit again? But like not that variety. And it was this really cool moment that told me a lot about who he is as a person and the character of the man to sit there and tell his friends to be like, hold on a second, I have to do this now. Because he was never a guy that ran, and then now that he was actually finding some success, he wanted to make sure that he was there and prevalent and able to answer everybody's questions. And he understood it all, and that's he always understands. Yeah. He always seems to understand what our job is and that we're just doing a job. He understands what the fans' role is. So for such a good guy to leave and then for the Cubs to eat money in that, all of that seems very unplausible to me.
Yeah, he's one of the most professional athletes I've ever been around in any sport. And like you said, I think that comes from the very beginning of how he was raised with, you know, two parents who were in high-profile professions and, you know, taught him that how important education was. And just he's certainly always been accountable. And even when questions are fairly poignant and difficult for him to answer, he'll sit there and do his best to be insightful and thorough and never seems to feel like he's being attacked in any sort of way, right? Or he understands, like you said, why the questions are coming. From a business standpoint, I don't know how much Theo and Jed take that away, right? Like, those are strengths of his, everything we've just talked about. But if you look at his production on the field strictly, how much does that play into just the business side of things? And like, I find it interesting. I'm with you. I don't think there's a chance this really happens. It certainly has gained a lot of steam, but word from out of the San Francisco and Bay Area camp of our counterparts is that they have no idea where this came from and that there's, you know, no shot, to use Cap's words, that this is going to go down. But for those that weren't interested in it, for those Cubs fans who weren't interested in it, you have to think about the financial side of that, in that the Cubs, what would come off of the books? I know you're not thrilled with Mark Melancon's results last season, but, you know, a change of scenery could change that. Who knows? And from a Samardzija standpoint, I know there's a few people who still feel like he burned a lot of guys and the way he left wasn't great. I still think there's a lot of guys on this team who would play with him, though, and who wouldn't mind him going out there for them if as a four guy or a five guy or whatever. However, we don't need to go down that road until maybe we hear a few more things about this. But I'm with you. Jason Hayward means a lot to this team, way beyond, as Joe always says, what shows up in the score sheet at the end and the stats at the end of the game.
Absolutely. We're going to take a quick break here on the Cubs Talk podcast. When we come back, it will be Patrick Mooney with Cubs GM Jed Hoyer in advance of the GM meetings as the winter offseason kicks off.
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Member FDIC.
So you were one of the last people I saw walking out of the Nationals clubhouse after that epic Game 5, and you normally are very sharply dressed, and then I saw you kind of just soaking wet in gym clothes, and that whole place was delirious, and then it's kind of crazy to think, a week later your season ends, abruptly. I guess, how do you look back on kind of that week, the highs of beating the Nationals and kind of showing that championship medal, and then the way you guys lost to the Dodgers? Was that I don't know if wake-up call is the right word, but how is that going to kind of color your off-season outlook now?
Yeah, no, it's a great question because, I thought that series with the Nationals was a great series. We sort of felt like there was three really good teams in the National League, and we played one of those teams in the first round, and I didn't think we actually played sharp baseball necessarily or great baseball against the Washington. I thought we showed a lot of toughness, and I thought that some of our playoff experience I thought shown through in that series. Winning some close games and overcoming a lot, given the fact that we struggled to hit Strasburg and struggled to hit Scherzer. It was really high after that game. That was one of the best games I've ever been a part of. Not aesthetically pleasing, but certainly competitively, it was a great game. I think to win on the road like that, it was an amazing experience. And then, I think the Dodgers were an outstanding team. They were rested, and we went into that series with two pitchers, going on short rest. And to the Dodgers' credit, they never really let us up for air. It felt like we probably went in a little bit tired into that series, and they throttled us, and we got dominated that series. There's no way around it. I think in some ways you have to look back and take certain aspects away. What can we do better? And in other aspects, you realize that by sweeping that first round, they got the chance to rest. They were at home, and that is part of why you want to have the best record in the National League. Is part of the playoff experience. So I think you try to take lessons from the postseason. But you also have to realize it's a very small sample, and you can make mistakes over-evaluating what might happen in four or five games, both positive and negative.
I don't want to at all rehash any of the coaching staff decisions. Each one on its own is understandable, and there's a lot of logic behind it. But I think taking a step back, people look at it as a lot of change for a group that had went to three straight NLCS. Is that indicative of maybe how open-minded or aggressive you might be this offseason when it comes to the roster? Does that carry over at all?
I wouldn't assume anything based on the coaching changes. As you said, each one we felt strongly about, to help us get better. People overuse, I think, a different voice and a different message. I think that's something people say a lot as a kind of catch-all when they let someone go. In this case, it really was accurate, and for the reasons that, with this group of players that they've been together for 3 years, they've had a lot of success. I think they've done some things really well. Some of the things we felt like we could improve upon as a group, situational hitting, using the whole field, sort of becoming a little bit less pitchable as an offense. That was something that was important. I think Chili Davis was perfect for that at that moment. I think our overall base running at times has not been as good as certain other areas of our team. We felt like that was something we can improve upon. So this was really about addressing, with our current player group, some of the things we felt like we haven't necessarily done as well as we'd hoped. And that is absolutely no knock on the guys who were here before, because they did an excellent job and put us in position to to win a lot of games over the last 3 years. But I do think, as a front office and as working with Joe, I do think it's our job to think about, like, what can we do to help this group of players improve. And I think those are the moves we made to do that.
I mean, we've heard several different times, these are our guys. I think the 2015 trade deadline when you didn't get a bat. After the Jose Quintana trade, that was kind of one of the kind of next day's headlines. I'm not sure if I heard that out of Theo's exit conference at the end of the season. I guess how have maybe forces aligned to where you maybe have to think about moving one of the guys you've kind of built up here? Nothing against them personally, but maybe kind of the market has shifted or your needs have shifted or the dollars are maybe a little different now. How do you look at that heading into next week's GM meeting / rumor fest?
Yeah, no, and we have to be open-minded. We're loyal to the guys that, have won with us, and we're loyal to the guys that we've drafted and developed and gotten here. There's no question. But they're talented, and we're going to be asked about them. And, our number one loyalty has to be to the Cubs and to the Cubs fans and making sure that we can try to put ourselves in position to win another title. And so I think we have to be open-minded. I don't think certainly I'd love to, have an offseason where we didn't have to do anything like that. But in order to get better and make improvements in certain areas, we might. But all in all, one of the things I really like about this group, I think this group's going to be together for a while, and fans like seeing the same faces. And I think when people are at the home opener next year, I think that our position playing group will look pretty similar.
Maybe this can be all written off as World Series hangover, but there were a lot of questions about this team through a frustrating first half. There was some kind of sloppiness in August, September, and ultimately they turned it on. Some of those guys I think who were key to that are now free agents, whether it's Wade Davis or John Jay, in terms of turning things around. I guess, are there any fundamental issues you have to look at in the clubhouse or maybe qualities that you need to find in some of these free agents that you're going to acquire one way or the other?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I don't know which players are going to be back. It's too early to speculate on that, but obviously guys like Jake and guys like Wade and John Jay, those guys did have a really good influence on the clubhouse. I think it was a really good learning year for everybody. I think, we had a very frustrating season that ended in the NLCS, if that's possible. I think that we were, two games under 500 at the All-Star break, and certainly struggled for different periods of the year. It was certainly no smooth ride. And I think in some ways 2016 may forever taint us and how we look at it, because that was as smooth a ride as you're gonna have through a baseball season, and that's probably not gonna happen again. So it was frustrating. I think we learned a lot, and I'm hoping our young players learned a lot about what it takes to sort of bounce back after success and be consistent. Because with this group, we've obviously always tried to surround them with veteran guys that are our leaders. At some point, they have to become the leaders themselves, and I think that that's something we want to emphasize, is, the days of bringing in, David Ross. At some point, those guys have to be able to stand on their own and lead the clubhouse. And so I think it's going to be a good learning experience for them. And it's a learning experience that it wasn't all that painful, right? Like, we ended up, winning a big postseason series, going back to the NLCS. I think there's a lot of positives to take from our season, but also a lot of areas of frustration. And I think everyone left with a bad taste in their mouth after the Dodger series, which I think is good, because it reminded me a lot of the Mets series, where a successful season ended with a big negative. And I think sometimes going into the winter that way is a good thing.
You mentioned David Ross. I was told from the start that him becoming bench coach was highly doubtful given all of his off-the-field interests and family demands. And Brandon Hyde certainly has a resume that speaks for itself. How do you see David Ross's future here? I mean, will he continue kind of in his role as a special assistant for you guys?
Yeah, he's going to continue in that role. And I think he's going to get more involved in that role every year. I think with David, I think that he probably wanted a more relaxing first year away from baseball and get a chance to spend time with his family more. And that just didn't happen because, he became too popular, right? It's his own fault, right? Dancing with the Stars took up a lot of his time and TV stuff. And so I think he's still very much in that transition period where he'll jump in with 2 feet here soon. I saw him at the World Series, and that's kind of how he described it. But I think right now, given his desire to spend time with his family and have a little bit of a break after playing, I think that's kind of where he is mentally. And I respect that. I think he's when you play that long and travel that much, at some point you'd kind of take a rest from that.
I know one of the first things you know Jason Hayward did as a Cub was making sure David Ross got that suite on the road, and we all know what a class act he is. Great dude, awesome defender. The Giants rumor was quickly extinguished. I guess in a case like that, do you reach out to the player or his people at Excel, or did that one so off the wall and kind of was dismissed so quickly that you don't say anything? And
in that situation, no, there's no need to. I think everyone realized it was just a fabricated rumor. There are times when maybe if a deal has some real legs and the player knows it has legs, that you know it's worth reaching out. But you know, one of the things we've talked about with all of our players is, you know, we're in a winning time here. We're in Chicago. It's a major market. Like, you're all going to get rumored in trade, and you just have to accept that as part of playing in a big market and part of winning. You know, and if you're in a smaller market and not necessarily in that mindset, you know, you can be a player that never has trade rumors. That's probably not going to happen here. And I think our players have been pretty good at understanding that. And I think, you know, with some rare exceptions, probably all these guys have been rumored at some point. And I think that might be a good thing for them to not freak out every time someone throws their name out there.
Looking it up, I might get this wrong, but guys who've had relievers who've gotten multi-year deals from you, I think was a swingman, Carlos Villanueva, Fujikawa, even Strope was like a year with an option tacked on or whatever. How is your thinking evolved? I know that's not always for lack of trying, but how do you look at kind of the bullpen now and maybe the sort of commitment you might have to make seeing how another October where relievers became kind of stars again?
Yeah, you got to keep an open mind. You know, certainly, as you said, we've certainly had offers out there to different guys that have gone elsewhere. Building a bullpen is a very complicated thing, and probably one of the hardest things that we have to do. They come from all over. You know, Pedro Strope has 7 with the Orioles and was in that deal, and he comes over to the Cubs, and he's been fantastic for us. You get guys off the waiver wire. You look at, you know, Brandon Morrow and the kind of season he had. That was obviously not expected. So I think you have to always just be vigilant, trying to find guys and put guys in opportunities to succeed. Now, that said, having some stability in the bullpen and guys with a little bit more of a track record or, you know, a little better stuff is important as well. So I feel like that's the part of the team that's constantly evolving. You look at our position playing group, for the most part, you kind of know, okay, these guys are going to be playing these positions, and it's pretty stable. We've actually had a really stable bullpen for, as things go, for the last 3 or 4 years, and you know whether that changes or not, we'll see. But we do have to throw more strikes out of the bullpen. I think that's probably one of the areas I think we failed last year for sure, was we actually had a pretty good bullpen on paper, but I thought when we got to the postseason or in bigger series in September, we just gave too many free base runners to the opponent, and I think it cost us, and I think it should cost you. And I think that's something that we need to try to address over the course of the winter, is that we just need to throw more strikes back there.
This, in a overall maybe weaker class of free agents, the reliever market does look pretty robust comparatively, right?
Yeah, there's a little bit more depth in the reliever market than some of the other markets. All in all, this is not a robust free agent class, which, you know, may lend itself to some creativity by a lot of teams. But that is one area of the market that has a few more players than some of the others.
There's a report came out that John Lackey intends to pitch next season. Do you look at that as maybe an option, or maybe is it a time to kind of inject some new blood into this rotation? And how do you look at overall the idea of replacing maybe 400-something innings for next season?
Yeah, no, I was excited for him when I saw that he was going to pitch. I mean, I think he's a guy that, you know, when you see what he does in the clubhouse every day, and he brings a swagger and an edge to the team, I think there's a lot of value there. You know, I don't want to comment on whether he's going to come back to the Cubs, but he's a real competitor, and I think there's something to be said for that. You know, I think that he's a guy you want on the mound. You want there in big spots. He's not going to scare off, and I think that not only does he bring that on the mound, I think he brings that edge into the clubhouse, and I think that has a lot of value.
We kind of joked for years about how losing was one of your big drawing cards to free agents, I guess. Kind of 1 year after, I guess, what are you going to be selling to prospective free agents now that kind of that idea of a historic quest, you know, isn't quite the same anymore?
Yeah, it's funny you said that. I talk about that a lot, you know, because this is the time of year where employees and coaches get asked permission on, and I always joke that, you know, losing forever was a great thing because no one ever wanted to leave before we won. But I think that now, and I give the Ricketts family almost all the credit on this, is that I think what you're selling now is just a first-class organization in a great city with a great fan base and a great ballpark. You know, I think we do everything first-class. I think that's the fact that we do that is kind of known throughout the league now. The renovations are awesome. You know, you come here and you clubhouse and you know, see all the ballpark renovations and the office and the hotel, and I just think that you realize this is a really vibrant place. And you're going to play on a Tuesday night in May against the last place team. You're going to play in front of a sold-out crowd, and I think players want that. And we have been in the NLCS 3 years in a row, and I think that they want to win as well. So I think that's what you're selling. It's a different sales pitch. You know, we can't sell a, you know, seventh biggest gathering of humans, you know, for a parade anymore. Like the curse is over, and then that part's gone. But I think what we're now selling is still really good. It's not unique, but it's still really positive.
I guess would that work on Japan's Babe Ruth, or how does that work with Mr. Ohtani?
I can't comment on him. Obviously, it's a you know, it's still sorting out. But you know, I think I can't really comment on his availability.
We don't have to comment on this, I guess. This would be different that you're not setting aside Tanaka money, which seemed to kind of tied up the offseason a couple of years ago.
Yeah, no, I mean, we have some flexibility. I think it's important as we think about our financial flexibility, and every team does this, but you know, I think you have to look at multiple off seasons and multiple deadlines as far as how you're going to allocate your money, and it's not just about, you know, I have X to spend this winter and spending that amount to try to get better. And you look up and you're like, wait, I don't have any flexibility next winter. So I think you constantly have to think through those issues as you're spending money, as you're making trades. You know, our goal is to be really good in 18. But our bigger goal is to, you know, be really good during this entire window and try to make sure we have multiple bites of the apple. And you know, it's one of the great things and things we're proud of here is, you know, we've made three straight NLCSs. We won a World Series. And I think that what we talked about is just making the playoffs and giving ourselves those chances. And I think having won that World Series, it does allow you to take that perspective a little more than it might have in a city that was starved to finally break the curse, right? That there are other teams I won't name that is, they've got to win that. They've got to win one, and every single year is just the ultimate quest to this is the year. That's not how we see it. You know, I think 2018 is really important, but so is 19, and so is 20, and that's always been the case, but it's easier to say that now and easier to do that now having won a World Series.
All right, that'll do it for our Cubs Talk podcast this week. Again, we are sponsored by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at wintrust.com/Cubs. You can find all of our podcasts at nbcsportschicago.com/podcast or subscribe on Apple Podcasts. See you next week.